Hello and welcome to Reaching for the Moon, presented by Everglades Moon Local Council, Florida Chapter of Covenant of the Goddess. COG supports individual works by its covens, members, and local councils. It's a vibrant network of a myriad of Wiccan and witchy resources, religious support, friendships, service opportunities, and more. To find out more, visit our website, emlc.net, our Facebook page, facebook.com/Everglades Moon, or Twitter, at emlctweets.
Hello everyone, this is Lady Bridget, and welcome to episode 20 for Ostara 2016. We're going to start off with Pandy's Pagan Projects, where she's going to teach us how to bloom amazing things in your life, followed by a chant which is written and sung by Shaylee called Hecate Crossroads Chant. After that, we'll join Cabal with Fudu, where he teaches us how to make soda bread. So appropriate for this season, especially since St. Paddy's Day or Irish Day is coming up shortly. That'll be followed by a song by Ginger Das called Teacher, which is from her album Hand and Hammer. You can learn more about Ginger Das and purchase her music at www.gingerdoss.com. That's GINGERDOSS.com. Then we'll join Lord Riken with his segment, It'll Grow on You, where he talks about Master Tonic 201, Beyond the Basics. And then we join Shaylee and her Nice Witch segment, and she'll be talking about Circling Up. And last but not least, we will end up with a song by Emerald Rose called We Come From Monkeys, a little bit of fun from their album, Archives of Ages to Come. And if you'd like to learn more about Emerald Rose, you can do so on their website, www.emeraldrose.com. That's EmeraldRose.com. And you can also buy their music there. And if you happen to hear any little birds in the background, well, yes, I am owned by several. So we hope you enjoy this podcast. Blessed be.
Happy Ostara from Pandy's Pagan Projects. It's spring, the days are getting longer and warmer, and now is a great time to take advantage of all the fertility around you to bloom amazing things in your life. We're going to do this with today's project, where we bless seeds that we will tend and decorate their pots. To do this project, you will need a terracotta or plastic pot, paints in a paintbrush, magic markers, and other decorations, potting soil, and seeds. You can use any seed for this project. Many people this time of year like to use sunflowers, but you can use any other flower or herb. Think about what it is you want to blossom in your life and see what herbs and flowers match up with that magical goal. Once everything starts blooming, you could then harvest the leaves and flowers and use them in your spell work and cooking. And that allows you to take in the energy in all sorts of different ways. Once you've identified the seeds you're going to use and the goal you have in mind, sit down with your pot and paints. Decorate your pot, keeping your spell intent in mind. Are you looking to be happier? Then draw some smiley faces, suns, and silly things on your pot. That's something that'll make you smile every time you look at it. Are you looking to blossom a new job? Then I'd recommend sigils for money, business, and prosperity. Your decorations can take any type of design, from runes to mandalas, sigils, or just freehand some designs while you focus on your intent. Finish it off if you'd like with the application of any sort of additional decorations, like charms, beads, or cutouts. While our pot dries, we'll take our seeds and infuse them with the goal we're looking to achieve. I do love my chants and charms, so I do tend to make up some sort of rhyming charm to use for my seed power-ups. Here's a basic chant that I've used. It can be used for any type of goal or intent. You, of course, can make up your own, use one you found on the internet, or use this one. Blessed be, ye sacred seeds, nestled in the mother's womb. Listen to my wants and needs, and help me fulfill them as you bloom. Be strengthened by the gentle wind, and nourished by the springtime rain. Then as the season ends, I'll find my goals you've helped me to attain. Don't like charms? It's totally fine. You can infuse your seeds by singing to them, blowing on them, holding them in your hands and focusing on your intent, or any other way you charge items in your daily practice. Once your seeds feel charged up and ready to go, fill your pot with your potting soil and plant your seeds according to the directions on the seed packet. Now it's up to you to tend your magic and watch it bloom. I can't wait to see what you've planted. Take pictures and post them on our Facebook page or in the comment section of our website. Blessed be. Hecate, I call to thee, keeper of the keys. By the crossroads where I seek my three-faced lady, offerings I bring to thee to honor my queen. At the crossroads where I meet my three-faced lady, Hecate, Hecate, goddess, walk with me. As I leave the crossroads where I found my lady.
So this is Cabal, and welcome to Fudu. And it's that time of year. Spring is everywhere, lots of flowers, and our thoughts naturally turn to soda bread. Now, I love soda bread because it's quick, and you can immediately build the flavors you like based on the ingredients. It won't have, of course, the complex flavors and textures that you can achieve from leavened bread, but that's why it's not called a leavened bread, right? Soda bread in the culinary world is actually a quick bread. It's in the same family as cakes, cookies, scones, and pancakes because it uses a chemical leavening. In the recipe I'll share with you today, I use baking soda and baking powder. Now that combination, what it does is that the baking soda actually helps the bread get darker, and the baking powder is really the workhorse for getting the volume. Both of these are activated by heat, and they release carbon dioxide, and that's what gives the bread the puffiness. So, before I get into the recipe, I will cover the controversy of soda breads. They are American. They are not Irish. They are not Welsh. They're actually not even European. The earliest recipes of quick breads are using techniques from pre-contact First Nations of North America, where potash or potassium carbonate was mixed in with corn flour to make a leavened flatbread. What likely happened was the European migrants learned the technique from the First Nations and began incorporating those techniques using other types of flour. By the late 18th century, quick breads were well known, and one of the earliest American cookbooks, Amelia Simmons' American Cookery, contains a recipe published in 1796. By the early 19th century, quick breads were widely popular, and when bicarbonate of soda became available in Europe, we start seeing quick breads appear there. And so it's probably likely that migrants took it back to Europe, and that's where we see the quick bread tradition form in Ireland, Wales, and Scotland. Cornbread is also a quick bread, but obviously that's Native American First Nations. So back to me. I personally like my soda bread to have a strong wheat flavor, and I also like some tanginess to it. There's one trick that does have to do with this bread, and that's never use bread flour. Basically, flours are graded by the level of protein that they contain. Flours with the lowest level of protein are best for cakes. Those with the highest level of protein are good for yeast leavening, where you want to develop a gluten structure that gives the bread that chew. Soda breads take an all-purpose middle-of-the-road flour, but some all-purpose flours, especially the brand name flours, do have more protein than you might think. So for this recipe, I use a generic all-purpose flour packed in light blue and white paper from a store that has a big green pea. This flour doesn't have any medieval knights, it doesn't have people's faces or stylized animals, it doesn't even have bucolic images or fantasy settings by a river. But the wheat flour that I use in this recipe does have an image of a once and future king, the one that's sleeping on the Isle of Avalon, who was given a sword by a woman in a pond. These things are important to get that right consistency of bread. One last thing about this bread, it's not a gluten bread. Gluten is created when flour comes in contact with water and then it's agitated. We don't want gluten buildup in this bread, so no kneading. You will be tempted to knead it. Don't knead it. You want it, but don't knead it. For this recipe, you'll be using a large bowl, a baking sheet, some parchment paper, and a large spoon or spatula. You will use your hands, and you will resist kneading the dough when you touch it with your hands. So, the first thing, preheat the oven to 400 degrees. Once the oven temperature alarm goes off, then it's okay to begin assembling the recipe. You want the oven hot first so that you get that burst of heat that helps the bread rise. Now, in that large bowl, mix in 2 cups of all-purpose flour and 1.5 cups of whole wheat flour. In the past, I've told you to sift whole wheat flours. Don't this time. Then add 1/2 cup of wheat germ. As a side note, you can pan toast the wheat germ for a stronger wheat flavor. I actually do this all the time. What you do is you place the wheat germ in a pan and stir it on medium heat. Once it you start smelling kind of a wheaty goodness, that's the technical term, then you're done. If not, if you keep going, you'll start burning it. Let it cool completely before you use it in a recipe. So now add not only the wheat germ, add 3 tablespoons of sugar, 2 teaspoons of salt, and 1 teaspoon each of baking soda and baking powder. Mix this all together with your fingers, and if you can't bear it, you can use a whisk. What you want, it is completely mixed throughout before you add any of the wet ingredients. Now, these wet ingredients are simple. It's 1.5 cups of buttermilk and 3 tablespoons of melted butter. I like more butter in there than other recipes. Worst things that happen. For a vegan alternative, you can use soy milk with 2 tablespoons of lemon juice to make a buttermilk substitute. And there are many substitutes for butter. Use the one that you like, but check it for meltability before you add it. Now, mix the buttermilk-butter mixture to the dry ingredients and slowly mix it together with your hand or spatula. I don't like it adulterated with any fruit or any kind of surprise, but if you like to have surprise abominations in your soda bread, you can add them now as you mix in the liquid ingredients. If the mixture seems a little dry, at the end of the stirring you can add a little bit more buttermilk. Try 1 tablespoon at a time until the dough is slightly wet but workable. You want to let it sit a few minutes if it seems a little wet before adding any more liquid, or even if it seems dry before adding any more liquid, because you want that flour to hydrate. Once the dough comes together, you'll want to knead it. Now, don't. I said don't knead the dough. What you want to do is massage it slowly until it forms a unified mass in the shape of a dome that's about 6 or 7 inches round. Don't pummel it, don't smack it, don't pound it into shape, don't do anything rough with it. You want to gently massage it until it comes together because you're trying to avoid more gluten buildup than should be in there. Place the dough on a piece of parchment paper once it's in that dome shape, then put both of those things onto a baking sheet. Last thing before it goes into the oven is that with a serrated knife, a steak knife works great for this, but something that's sharp, you want to cut an X pattern on top of the dough, and you want that X to go in about 1/4 inch deep. And you want it to run the length of the dome to about 1 inch from the end. This will help the bread expand. And then once that X is ready, put the dough in the oven for about 45 minutes. Depending on your oven, you may want to rotate it halfway through. And if you're using a convection oven, you want to watch it very carefully because that swirling hot air can actually crust the bread before it has an opportunity to rise. What you're looking for in terms of doneness is that you want even browning and the bread has a hollow sound. You can also insert a skewer into the middle and it should come out clean once the bread is done. There's a few sites that will say that the temperature of the dough should be at about 195 degrees, and once it hits that, then you know that you're done. Now, once the bread is done, take it out, and what I like to do is to brush it with more butter. about another 2 tablespoons. If you don't want to do this, well, something's wrong with you, but you don't have to. Don't cut the bread. Do not eat it. You want to let it cool completely before serving it. And the reason for this is that starch that's in there will actually be semi-solid. And if you cut that bread too soon, you run the risk of it falling apart. So you want to let it cool completely before serving it, at least 45 minutes to an hour, basically until it's completely cool to the touch, and then you can go ahead and cut it. Don't worry about the crust will stay there. Once you cut it after an hour, you'll hear that crunching sound, and it will be delicious. Once that bread is cool, you can dig in and enjoy. Well, I hope you give soda bread a chance during the spring, and happy Ostara.
Thank you.
So this is Lady Bridget, and I am here with Lord Ryken. And Lord Ryken, tell us what you're going to talk about today.
Well, as it happens, we finished up the medicinal herbs in your kitchen cabinet with the S's last week, with the exception of turmeric. I think we went ahead and did turmeric too, didn't we?
I think you did a little on turmeric, so. Yes.
Okay. And we went back to see what we were going to do for this episode. It's like, oh, gee, really? Unless you want to count vanilla bean, which is quite a stretch, there's no more medicinals past turmeric. So I'm going to wind up with Master Potonic 201.
Well, I want to congratulate you on having completed the medicinal spices in the kitchen. And the reason is because I listen to a lot of podcasts, and a lot of times they'll start a series and they never finish it. So congratulations on actually finishing all of the spices.
Well, you're welcome. So we're going to get going on Master Tonic 201 instead of 101. We're not going to go over what Master Tonic is, what it does, the basics. You all know all that.
You can Google it.
Oh, you can Google 1,000 times over. Garlic, onion, ginger, horseradish, cayenne pepper, equal parts of each, chopped up, thrown in a big jar, covered with Bragg's apple cider vinegar, shaken twice a day for 2 weeks, and it'll cure anything.
Almost.
Oh, give me something that won't cure. Including cancer, according, if you listen to some people. Dr. Schultz knew what he was doing when he came up with this back in the 20s. These days, people are reinventing it, calling it Super Tonic, Fire Cider. It's Master Tonic. It's just that I want to point out all the other good things you can do with Master Tonic besides taking a shot of it. Okay? So, we're going to go on with that. Skin rashes, eruptions, things of that nature, you can dampen a cloth with Master Tonic and put it on eruptions. I sometimes have problems with the top of my head, and I'll just wash the top of my head, which is bald, with some Master Tonic. It's amazing how wonderfully it'll cure things. If you have an infected cut, soak a little bit of Master Tonic in a bit of cotton matting or a bit of cotton cloth and wrap it on it. It's very sterilizing. Remember World War II? When they were using nothing but garlic and honey in the Italian theater, and the men who were treated in people's homes with garlic and honey had a much lower rate of infections and a much better healing time than the people who were getting the antibiotics in the field hospitals. This is going to be a very unstructured segment because these are just all things that I've done. There's nothing I'm going to tell you about that I haven't done. but it's going to kind of pop out here and there, I'm afraid, a little bit.
So it's going to be like going off on many tangents.
Yes, I'm going to do many tangents here. So, like I say, you got skin eruptions, rashes, and such, as long as they aren't in the really private places. I wouldn't want to put some of this stuff some places.
Too stingy?
Too, well, it's got cayenne oils in it, after all.
Ow.
But if you're having foot problems, a little bit of master tonic in a hot bowl of water, soak your feet in, wonderful.
So you can add master tonic to your foot bath?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm going to try that.
Just think about that for a half a second. Foot funguses and things like this, you're dealing with cayenne, garlic, ginger, all this great stuff. It'll help take care of a lot of that sort of thing. I mean, it's
of course, you're going to toss it out after you've used it on your feet.
Yeah, but I would say if you got a spray bottle, you can use it as a bug killer on your plants. I mean, you can still use it on your tomatoes.
Oh, there's a thought.
Never occurred to you to use apple master tonic as bug spray, huh?
No.
Ding, ding. Put it, you know, just a squirt bottle, put a little bit of master tonic in with a drop or two of detergent.
What?
One drop of detergent, and well, it's for surfactant purposes. Oh. One drop of Joy detergent, it's a surfactant. And so just one drop in a quart of water, along with as much master tonic as you want to put in, I would say 4 ounces, and squirt, squirt, squirt. Die, bugs, die. They'll die happy, but they'll die. Okay. For sore throat, there's two ways to use your master tonic that you've made for sore throat. One way is you just throw in a couple of ounces of master tonic and a couple ounces of honey, mix them together, and take a tablespoon of it to cover the sore throat. Better way to have done it was after you finished making the master tonic in the first place and you strained it all off, you took your still fairly coarsely chopped master tonic herbs and you cover them with honey and let that soak for 2 weeks. And believe it or not, it will be a nice light syrup. It won't be thick like honey before, and it sucks out a whole lot more of the active ingredients and makes a wonderful throat syrup, a very smooth throat syrup. I always do that, and I always have a little bottle of that on hand in case there's a sore throat. So either way you want to do it, if you want to dilute that with water and gargle, you know, you want to take your, or you can just take straight master tonic. You got a really sore throat, master tonic, water, gargle it before you swallow it. I use master tonic for ear infections. I mean, for years, I've used garlic oil for ear infections, and the history of using cider vinegar to dry up a wet ear goes way back. There's nothing wrong here with putting a few drops of master tonic in your ear. Safe, healthy, and it'll do a great deal for your infections. Okay, this one's going to scare you, but if you've got a head cold and you're all clogged up, one thing you can do is you can heat a pan of water on the stove. I wouldn't go putting it into your professional diffuser, but heat a pan of water on the stove, put a little bit of master tonic in, put your head over it, and, you know, inhale. But what happens if it gets in my eyes? Well, let me tell you something, guys. I have put straight up master tonic straight into my eyes. Before you certify me here, actually, it has a long history of doing that. You can look it up. We had a governor who had problems with her eyes, and this was called for. So to demonstrate that I could do it without being blinded for good, I went ahead, and before I told her about this, I put it in my eyes. And a couple days later, I put it in my eyes again to demonstrate right in front of her. She did it, and it cured the infection she had in her eyes with no problem at all. It's going to burn.
It stings.
Yeah, but it also clarifies the eyes, something amazing. I mean, my vision literally, don't laugh, seemed brighter for the next couple of days after I did that. I mean, I think I scorched a whole layer off there. But straight up master tonic, I put it straight into my eyes with an eye. Well, I had, you know, I have the little eyeglass. I put some in it and went.
You can use a shot glass.
Yeah,
well.
Use a shot glass
or an eyedropper.
I happen to have the one that's shaped right. I'm not sure I could handle an eyedropper, I think.
Well, you don't put it on the eye.
Yeah.
You have it above the eye.
No, dear, what I mean is, knowing what was coming, I just don't think I could help running away.
Oh,
it's one thing when you have the eye open and you just toss your head back so quick you can't get out of the way.
I see.
But I have done it, so don't worry about it. Indeed, if you have a small eye infection, sticking some master tonic in the water and putting your head over it with, you know, cover with a towel, the old-fashioned way of doing it. Steam good for styes in the eye and many other things. So that works too. But I have done it. This is no theory here. Oh, also, one thing we shouldn't always stress is that you should take your Master Tonic when you first feel the cold or flu coming on. You know, there's that period of time, there's that window of opportunity, usually about 8 hours, when you're not feeling as good as you should feel, but you don't really know if you're sick yet. Don't wait to find out. Take your Master Tonic. If you did not take your Master Tonic during that window of opportunity when you could nip it in the bud, that's another reason to soak your feet in hot water with Master Tonic. You kick the Master Tonic back in the top half, you can soak your feet in some Master Tonic laden water too. When I'm camping in really cold weather, I will take Bengay or Tiger Balm, rub it on my feet, pull my socks on, and go to bed. Your feet stay warm. The same thing can be done with cayenne pepper. Oh, look, you can do the same thing with rubbing a little bit of Master Tonic on your feet and pulling the socks on. So obviously, if you can soak your feet in some Master Tonic laden water, that's also going to be good for helping to kick the cold.
So doing it at the feet end and at the mouth end,
yep,
are both helpful.
Mm-hmm. Now, most of the time, Master Tonic is taken at room temperature. I do want to specify this. You never want to bring Master Tonic to a boil in some water. You don't even want to have it in water that's all that hot. But more specifically, if you have a head cold and you've got it full blown and you're all stepped up, putting the Master Tonic in an equal amount of warm water, warm from the tap water, and then kicking it back, you'll get more of the horseradish effect up in the sinuses. Something's going to give. Either your ears are going to blow out or your nose is going to blow out. Something's going to give. Now, let's get on to the Master Tonic recipe. We all know the basic recipe, or if you don't,
just Google it.
Yeah, just Google it. But at any rate, for some reason, turmeric is suddenly popular. And where once upon a time I could not find turmeric to save my soul, it's available everywhere now. Winn-Dixie carries turmeric. You don't even have to go to Whole Foods. So this batch of Master Tonic I made this year had an equal part of turmeric added to it, or turmeric, however you want to pronounce it.
Why is that?
Because turmeric is a wonderful anti-inflammatory. And most diseases are inflammations. Inflammations of this, inflammations of that, inflammations of the other things. Turmeric is an anti-inflammatory. Now, certain word of caution here, I am hypoglycemic. All right? I have not had any adverse effect whatsoever, and I'm a fairly sensitive hypoglycemic. I have had no adverse effect whatsoever taking my Master Tonic with turmeric in it. Okay? So don't freak out. Yes, once upon a time I got some capsules that were 90% turmeric powder. Took a couple of those and nearly hit the floor within 30 minutes because my blood sugar had dropped so low. But at the amount that we're using it and the way we're using it, I've had no ill effect or adverse effect whatsoever in using turmeric in my Master Tonic. So, Master Tonic basic recipe, added turmeric to it. I also add whole, lightly cracked black powder.
Black pepper.
Black pepper, sorry. Black powder. Black peppercorns.
I'd like to see you drink some black powder.
Yeah. And this current batch, I also sliced up several whole lemons and put in with it. It's great. The lemons make everything pop. Why am I doing all that? Well, because we stay so healthy that most of the Master Tonic is going to go unused if we don't use it for salad dressing. Yeah. So my Master Tonic, the gallon that's in there right now, has all your regular stuff. It has fresh turmeric root in it. It has whole peppercorns cracked. It has lemon slices in it. And after all was said and done, I, of course, put some molasses in it. I also, in this batch, put some fresh twigs of rosemary, okay, and oregano. Oregano is one of nature's most perfect healing things. I haven't brought myself to the point yet of being willing to add an equal part of oregano to it because I kind of fear the amount of oil that would be in there.
Yeah.
But I use oregano oil in the bathroom. If I have any indication that I've got any kind of little infection in my mouth, you know, whatsoever, I'm going to put a few drops of oregano oil on my toothpaste, and I'm going to brush my teeth with it. So I also have rosemary and oregano in this batch. I did not put any parsley to speak of in this batch. I think maybe a quarter of a cup of parsley in this batch, fresh chopped parsley out of the garden, because I didn't have all that much parsley in the garden at that point. I did not use any celery seed this time, but if you're really like us, you end up using most of your master tonic for salad dressing, you might want to throw some celery seed in there too. And in the end, with or without mixing it with olive oil, still makes a great salad dressing either way you want to look at it.
I usually use it straight.
Yeah, me too. Anymore, I prefer pretty much just straight.
Because like after a year, the flavor
is so blended and smooth.
It's so mellow. Mm-hmm. It's like a very fine, expensive vinegar that you would buy, you know, in a specialty food store.
Oh, yeah. Except you'd pay $12 for 4 ounces.
It's way healthier.
Yep.
And it's really tasty. And I don't need the extra fat in the oil anyway.
Yep.
It makes an awesome salad dressing. I put it in an old spray bottle, one of the old butter sprays.
Right.
Or any old spray bottle. And then you get the added benefit of having, you know, the spray, so you're using quote unquote less and less calories and whatever. So you can just spray that all over your salad.
Yeah.
And it's so tasty.
Yeah, if you like your salad dressing a little bit sweeter, well, just put a little bit of honey in it. Or a little bit of cane syrup. And by that I don't mean the crap they sell with the pancake mixes, you know, not like the fake molasses, or fake molasses, the
fake maple
syrup and such.
Yeah.
That's not where you want to look. Well, I guess you might find it there, but I like to get the Barbados type cane syrups. Or if you live here in Florida where we are, you can go to all these different fairs in the wintertime when they do the sugar cane extraction. You know, we have the Living History Museums who squeeze out the cane. But the stuff that you can buy in the Jamaican food stores, the Haitian food stores, they have a big bottle of Mama So-and-so's pure cane syrup. That's the real deal. I mean, we do buy this stuff that's made at these outdoor living history things, and I compare it with that, and it's absolutely perfectly the same. This stuff is the real deal. Put a little bit of that along with your apple cider vinegar, rather with your master tonic, and use that for a salad dressing. Works great. And of course, when I was 16, I first read about apple cider vinegar and your health, all the benefits of using just apple cider vinegar and honey.
And you don't want to tell people how long ago that was.
Okay. let's put it this way, you know, God was a next door neighbor, all right? That's all you need to say. Me and Moses were buds.
Yeah.
At age 16, I was curing elderly neighbors. Okay, I was using them as guinea pigs, but it's just between us. I read this book, Apple Cider Vinegar and Your Health by Dr. J.D. Jarvis, and I started passing it around to our elderly neighbors who had bad arthritis, and to a man, every one of them found tremendous benefit from it. And apple cider vinegar and water was what the Roman troops, it was the Gatorade of the Roman Empire, all right? And for 3,000 years, up to and through the Korean War, apple cider vinegar and water was recommended by anybody who went through Camp Lejeune. Good long track record of doing that. And yeah, a little bit of master tonic, actually, at least the way we're making the master tonic now with the molasses and such in it, it's delicious. I just put equal parts of master tonic and water in there and was sipping it back. And you know what? I could have sipped that all evening long. Oh, funny story. I make something called apple pie for my rendezvous. It's spices, whiskey, Everclear, honey. I make it's apple pie. It's got, you know, a lot of clove, a lot of cinnamon in it and stuff like that. But it's a sweet sipping stuff for sitting around the fire at night. I have it in the same kind of bottles that I use when I'm getting the master tonic to settle. I like my master tonic really clear. So once I'm drawing it off, it's settle, draw it off, settle, draw it off. And then I add the molasses. Well, before you add the molasses, it's the same color as my
apple pie.
As my apple pie, and it was in the same size bottle, which I prefer, the Everclear bottles. And I got confused one day, and I drew off the last bit of Master Tonic into a half a bottle of what I thought was Master Tonic, and it was actually a half a bottle
of apple
pie.
So you mixed apple pie and Master Tonic?
Yeah. So I made a Master Tonic liqueur. And that's what I accidentally gave Bradley.
Oh, no.
Your nephew.
Do you have to tell this on the podcast?
Well, he's of age. He's drinking age. I didn't give it to
him. That's true.
No, he's of drinking
true.
Age.
He's not a minor.
We were getting
anymore.
Him drunk. Come on.
I forgot.
Yeah. And he really enjoyed it. And I didn't realize that that's what I'd given him because I hadn't tried it. And I went to get some apple pie one day and took a sip and went, holy crap. Enjoy good health, people. That was really delicious.
So that's another use for Master Tonic. You can yeah. mix it with. Now, I have seen apple pie moonshine in in the liquor stores now. They're making it.
Oh, yeah, but that's another podcast, dear.
No, no, no. I'm just saying. They're making it. You know,
yeah.
I've seen apple pie moonshine.
Yeah.
So if they don't know how to make apple pie moonshine, they can add their old Master Tonic to the apple pie that's in the liquor store.
Mine's better.
I know yours is better. I've tasted it.
Okay, now. Here's some focuses here. You've made a gallon of Master Tonic. Well, you can take a small jar of that Master Tonic you just made, and you can put a whole bunch of cloves and allspice in it, along with some cinnamon, and leave it to sit for a few months. And if you or somebody you know has a dental problem, an oral problem, somebody suddenly got a bad tooth, you have it on hand. You just increase the amount of eugenol that's in your Master Tonic. You'll get all of the curative effects. I was just reading an article by... I'm kind of fixated on this because I was just reading an article by someone who had a friend who had a terribly abscessed tooth, but no insurance and no money. And they had them rinse their mouth out 4 times a day with Master Tonic straight up. And after 4 days, the abscess was gone.
Oh, wow.
It was healed. And I'm not the least bit surprised by that. Really not. And, of course, what's Master Tonic but Moho Creo? You know, you can also use your Master Tonic for cooking in other ways. For you folks that might be listening to this that aren't in Florida, Moho Creo is what you soak meat in before you cook it.
Oh, so in other words, you can use it to soak your chicken or as a, I guess, would you soak steak in it or something?
Yes.
Oh, you could.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And pork. Particularly pork. Let's get into the dregs. Now, when I finish with my Master Tonic, I have a 3-step process. After the Master Tonic gets drained off, I then take some honey and I mix the Master Tonic dregs with honey and let that sit for 2 weeks, and then I pour that off. It no longer pours like honey. It now pours like a light syrup. That's my throat medication. I then take what's there and I take some Everclear and I cover it with Everclear. And I shake it for 2 more weeks, and then I pour that in with the Master Tonic that I've already made, and I have it capped still in the large mouth jars, just with a light piece of cloth, so that most of the alcohol dissolves. Gives me a more intense Master Tonic.
Evaporates, you mean?
It dissolves. Evaporates, yes.
Okay.
Sorry. The alcohol mostly dissolves. I imagine there is a tiny bit of alcohol in my Master Tonic. I don't mind.
Well, if people are worried about having alcohol in their Master Tonic, then they probably want to skip that last step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, most people skip it anyway because you can't get, you know, you have to use vodka down here mostly if you want to do it anyway.
Right.
But at any rate, okay, once you've gotten to that point with it, I use the dregs, mix it with oil, with olive oil, and use it for basting the turkey because by then you're at turkey day. I always make my Master Tonic the first new moon as we approach the 1st of November. So that I've gotten all this out of the way, and I can put some olive oil with my Master Tonic and with Master Tonic dregs, and I cover our Thanksgiving turkey with it, inside and out.
It's true.
And it's delicious. Never heard anybody turn their nose up at it yet.
No, it's really good.
But alternately, you could take your Master Tonic dregs and dry them. If you're going to do that, I recommend I do my Master Tonic ingredients coarsely chopped. Well, as finely chopped as I can do it with a knife. I'll put it that way. That coarse. I don't put them through the blender because I don't like the pain in the butt of trying to get rid of the very finely divided stuff out of it. If you're going to dry your Master Tonic dregs to make one of the best overall dry rubs and cooking spice, vegetarians particularly, please note, throw some of this in when you're making your veggie stock or whatever. The best way to do that, in my opinion, is that's the point where you want to use your food processor. Throw all your dregs in, put a little bit more apple cider vinegar in there with it, or water, but apple cider vinegar is going to evaporate faster and give you more flavor. Then chop the whole thing up into a finely pulverized mass. Spread that out, let it dry, bottle it, put it in a pepper grinder or whatever, and use it for your flavoring. That's one way to go with it. Or, again, you can just mix that with some olive oil and use it on the turkey. I might try that this year. One year, I took an entire mason jar of apple cider vinegar dregs, drained, dry as I could get them, packed tight in the jar, covered the jar, put it on the shelf in the garage, and checked on it 9 months later. No mold.
You just wanted to see what would happen.
I just wanted to see what would happen. I always make the stuff, so there's always next year, you know. If you're funny, why I do it around November is horseradish isn't always available, but it's usually available in November.
But if they do three drawings, that's 6 weeks. Yeah, so they're going to have to start it earlier if they want to put it on there.
The alcohol doesn't really take
it doesn't take 2 weeks?
No.
So you're actually drawing it off three times. So you're drawing it off with the vinegar, then you're drawing it off with the honey, then you're drawing it off with the alcohol.
Right.
So you have three different ways of extracting the same batch of vegetables.
Yep.
That's really good.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good use.
And they still got some flavor in them. People, try some lemon slices in your Master Tonic. You will thank me for it.
Sounds like it would be good.
Oh, it is. Oh, it's in there right now. You should try it. This batch of Master Tonic is only 3 months old. And it is as smooth as my first batches of Master Tonic used to be after 10 or 11 months. Mostly I attribute that to the use of the molasses. But unlike some of my older batches of Master Tonic where the molasses just didn't seem to be as fully integrated, like there'd be a sludge on the bottom and such, this is crystal clear. It's black, but it's crystal clear. It's
so
really pretty.
There are different grades of molasses. What grade do you recommend they use?
Light.
Maybe that's the difference, because I remember...
Well, that's true, yes. I did use Blackstrap before, and while the Blackstrap molasses, it could be said to have more iron and such in it, this year I used light molasses. I used the first drawing molasses. I didn't use the heavy, dark Blackstrap.
That's probably why it's integrated better.
Yeah. Yeah, it probably is. Good stuff. And, of course, my whole office is going through its third round of plague. And I just snicker, as do the other people who know to take my Master Tonic. But those who will not take the stuff just keep getting sick over and over again. And, of course, there's other herbs that could be used. I saw one lady had a really ridiculous list of stuff. I would not use basil. I'm sorry. If you want basil in your salad dressing, then again, take one bottle of Master Tonic, throw some sprigs of basil in there. Don't do your whole batch that way. That's one of the beauties of Master Tonic. Once you've got your base material, just get yourself six different bottles and put six different herbs in the different bottles and fill each other in it. Like, pretend it's just like all these fancy vinegars that you're buying in the stores these days. Take notes. Go to the store, write down, oh, that's $10 a bottle. That's $9 a bottle. That's $14 a bottle. You don't need any of that. You've got Master Tonic. You've got the best thing going.
And you can put different herbs in different bottles and do your own experiments.
Yeah. Let me know how it turns out.
Do you want to give people your email in case they want to email you questions?
My email is reikin01@gmail.com.
Well, thank you, Lord Reikin. As always, very informative.
You're very welcome. I'm going to go have some more Master Tonic.
Hello, my name is Shaylee. Welcome to Nice Witch, a Miss Manor segment for all Wiccans, witches, and pagans alike. Today's topic, circling up. I know, we're all pagans, we love to circle up. But there is some structure to this. This may vary circle to circle, event to event, festival to festival, so pay attention. If the coordinators or the ritual have specific instructions they want you to follow, they will usually tell you before ritual begins. If not, follow the crowd. For example, if everyone is walking through two torches or going to a specific quarter, do that. There may be no specific way. Just pay attention and you'll be just fine. Directions to move. Once circled up, you should always be moving clockwise. Some groups or covens will do this until it's time to close up. Then everything is in reverse and you will walk counterclockwise. Not all groups do this. Just pay attention and you'll be fine. While most groups and covens don't get bent out of shape if you walk the wrong way, this is done for a reason, and if you're a solitary practitioner, or if your group does not do this, you should still be mindful and respectful of the fact that you are visiting. Some Wiccans follow this very rigorously, and the last thing you want to do is feel like you're insulting them. Where to stand in the circle? I know this may sound silly, but when we say circling up, we mean circling up. Don't bunch up all into one quarter. Spread out. Try to fill in the gaps. Keep walking around the circle until it is completely filled. If you end up standing in front of a quarter, and you're aware that you're standing in front of a quarter, don't block it. Usually, someone actively running the ritual is going to need to stand there, either to call a quarter or to obtain something from that quarter. How do you know it's a quarter? Usually, it's marked with a quarter altar, a candle, a tiki torch, a lantern, a landmark of some kind, something indicating that it is a quarter. If it's a really large circle or crowd, it might be hard to maintain this shape or avoid blocking a quarter. Don't worry about it. Those running the circle will let you know if you need to move and or step aside. Also, don't be surprised if someone purposely cuts into the circle instead of following the circle like everyone else. A group or cover member or a circle assistant may have a specific place to stand, and you might be there, so you just need to move out of the way. I know most of us have this down packed, but occasionally it's nice to remember which way you should be walking, what you should be avoiding, and where you should be standing. Some groups are very informal, and none of this will be a concern, but with a group that has very strong beliefs and structure, you should always try to be respectful of that. So remember, whether we're all gathering to honor the gods, celebrate the seasons, mark the turning of the wheel, perform rituals, simply to enjoy each other's company, or whatever the reason may be, we are gathering, and we need to be considerate of each other. So enjoy yourselves, and remember to be a nice witch.
Hey everyone, this is Lady Bridget, and so many people have asked me, well, how do I get to meet people in EMLC? How do I join Everglades Mood Local Council? Well, I just wanted to let you know that myself and several other EMLC people will be at two upcoming festivals. The first one is Equinox in the Oaks, which takes place March 24th through the 27th, and you can find more about that on the website equinoxintheoaks.org. So the other one is the Caldera Pagan Music Festival, and that's being held May 26th through May 30th, and you can find out about that on paganmusicfestival.com. We'll be there. If you just walk around and ask people, hey, have you seen Lady Bridget? Probably someone will have, and they'll be able to point you in the right direction. There'll be a lot of other EMLC folks there as well. So just figured I'd throw that out there and hope to see you soon.
Hi, everyone. Before we begin our last segment of this episode, we'd like to thank you for listening. Putting a podcast together is a time-consuming labor of love, but knowing that someone is listening to our hard work and hopefully gaining something from it makes it worthwhile. Would you let us know you like the podcast by going to our website at emlc.net, click on the podcast tab, and write a comment. Tell us what you like and what you'd like to hear more of on our podcast. And even better, why not leave us a rating on iTunes? Ratings help us become more visible to more people. It's not about ego, it's all about service. Thank you, and blessed be.
Darwin had a revelation. He said all life evolved from the confusion. He had a theory. It made some people nervous when he came to the embarrassing conclusion. We come from monkeys. We're not so special. We've only got a little extra DNA. The chimpanzees are very close to us. Australopithecus, he's not so far away. We come from monkeys swinging in the trees. A little bit of monkey inside you and me. A monkey in the middle, a monkey on your back. It's a fundamental problem, but a scientific fact. We come from monkeys. Minded, said creation was the answer. They got upset, then those got out of joint. They say we're missing the monkey in the middle. They're picking it, it kinda proves a point. You're not so hairy, you haven't got a tail. You're not adapted for living in a tree. But if you care, count up all your chromosomes. You're 98.4% a chimpanzee. We come from monkeys swinging in the trees. A little bit of monkey inside you and me. Monkey in the middle, a monkey on your back. It's a fundamental problem, but a scientific fact. We come from monkeys. Double helix monkey bars, feel the primal beat. 6 million years we've been walking on our feet. A barrel full of monkeys swinging from the family tree. We don't want to start a social revolution. We just want to talk about some monkey evolution. But the knuckle dragging stool flinging fools just don't want to see. We come from monkeys. If you can't handle the thought of evolution, you might just call it intelligent design. But if the universe keeps on evolving, then maybe you should just evolve a bigger mind. We come from monkeys swinging in the trees. A little bit of monkey inside you and me. A monkey in the middle, a monkey on your back. It's a fundamental problem, but a scientific fact. We come from monkeys. Monkey see, monkey do, monkey see, monkey do, monkey see, monkey do, monkey me, monkey you. Let's all face it, it's all true. We come from monkeys.